Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase, NA member FDIC, 2024, JP Morgan Chase & Co. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Pushkin.
I don't want to pick a fight with the cartel or the biker gangs or drug lords. I'm a small town chief trying to run the department, and we have one cold case that we're trying to solve. So we just want to find the truth.
That's Ben Ford, the chief of police in Travelers Rest. When I was reporting for this podcast, I spent a bunch of time with Chief Ford, or Ben. That's what he said I should call him. He's a very personable guy, and he's deeply invested in Brooke Henson's case. In fact, when I first started poking around on this story, he actually reached out to me. He wanted to share what he knew in the hopes that, by getting the word out there, he might finally solve this case. So, when I first got into town, we drove around for a while. He gave me a little tour, and we talked about the case, about all the competing theories on what happened. And then we headed back to his office and talked some more. Honestly, it's unusual for law enforcement to be quite this candid. So today, we're sharing some of that conversation. And one of the first things that Ben shared with me was that he'd grown up here, in Travelers Rest. And so everything that happened here with Brooke Henson, it was personal for him. I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover. This week, we're going back to Travelers Rest.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase Bank, NA member FDIC, copyright 2024. JP Morgan Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
So what was it like growing up here? Just give me a sense for,
Yeah, so, you know, quiet, small town. You pretty much knew everybody, and or you knew of everybody. So there weren't many things that could get kept secret around here. So, you know, it was a quiet little town, not a whole lot of crime. You know, just a great place to grow up, really.
Brooke Henson must have been about your age, maybe a bit younger.
She was a little younger than me, yes.
Did you know her or her family growing up?
I did not. I didn't know. I was 5 years, let's see, 5 years older than her, I believe. My brother actually is 3 years younger than me and actually knew her. And actually my wife knew her from school. Oh. So I have those connections that they knew of her. And Brooke dropped out of school early in high school, in 10th grade, I believe it was. But growing up through middle school and high school, yeah, I've got family members and my wife that kind of knew her.
Does that change things in terms of making it more personal? Like, this is not just some random person who you're investigating what happened. This is someone that you have personal connections to in a small town.
It does for me. And even when I worked at another agency, the Malden Police Department, I knew of this case. I knew of this case my entire career when I worked at other agencies, and I knew that she was missing and it was unsolved. And if there were people that I came across that I thought may know something, I would ask. And it wasn't even my case then. I worked for other agencies, but I would ask. And if they had good information, I would refer them up here to Travelers Rest to see if they could help out with the case. So it does make it a little more personal. I have an investigative background throughout my career. Most of my career has been investigations, and it's something that I don't like to give up on. It's especially when it hits home and it's so close to people that I know. So
there's so many different accounts in the media, and I know a lot of there's a lot of misinformation out there, but let's maybe just start, like, what do we know about the facts of this case? What are the things that we can say relatively certain, and what don't we know about the facts surrounding her disappearance?
So interestingly enough, what we thought were facts in this case may not have been now that we found out in the last year. So what was reported was that Brooke was last seen at her residence at about 2:30 in the morning, outside of the residence, going for a walk. That's reported by her mother and a couple of other individuals, family members there that spoke to her, saw her. That's their account. We don't actually know if that's true or not. There are conflicting stories now saying that, no, she never walked away from the house. She was other places. We have several statements now that she was last seen alive up in the River Falls community of Greenville County, which is about 6 or 8 miles north of Travelers Rest. And we believe that she was last seen alive up there.
On the same night or a different night?
It'd be the same night, the same night. She was known to leave and maybe walk around the town. She was known as a walker around town, and she may walk to get some cigarettes or walk up to the local store, and there was some pool tables there, a little hangout. Of course, these places were closed this time of night, which makes it even more strange on why she would have went for a walk then. However, we have statements that say that, you know, this person picked her up, or this person picked her up, or this person. We have so many different statements, we don't know what's true and what's not. So what we're finding out is the deeper we dig, the more stories we're hearing. I heard one the other day, and I can't go into detail about some of the stories, but allegedly this person killed her now, and we never heard that person's name in 23 years. And this is how this person did it. So, you know, we're still following up on that, obviously, but you know, she was the facts remain in the case file that she was last seen at her residence. However, we do have statements she was seen in River Falls, so we believe somebody picked her up. What we believe now is took her to River Falls to some more parties. And we've been told there were parties up there too that night. So we believe that she was last seen alive up there.
What happened that all of a sudden a year ago this changes? I mean, we're almost, more than 20 years out. So what happens that kind of gets this new information going?
So when I came in the end of 2018, I started digging into the case myself. I wanted to look at it and see. After a couple of years of doing that off and on, you know, being the police chief, I have other responsibilities too. There's a friend of mine that's retired law enforcement that he and I talked about this case a little bit. And he wants to be anonymous, and I'm going to keep him anonymous. But he came into the picture, and we talked a little bit, and I allowed him to look at the case file, which is, you know, four banker box full of information. Of course, I scanned it and put it on digital format so he could look at it and that type of thing. So when he came on the scene, he had some, it was a fresh set of eyes. It was a retired law enforcement officer that's just volunteering his time. So at that point, we really started hitting it hard and talking to more and more people. And so about a year, it was April of last year, April of 2021, when we started that. And that kind of jolted us in this investigation to spend more time working on it. The main thing that we've heard in the last year is that it's not necessarily how Brooke was killed. It's what happened to her afterwards. And that it's much bigger than we could ever imagine. That's what people are telling us. So we're trying to figure out what they mean by that. And the different theories that have come into play is one has to do with some type of satanic worship or cult. Something, you know, that could be a possibility. There's been mentions of maybe biker motorcycle clubs involvement. I won't go into specifics because you just don't know if it's true. We haven't proved any of that. And then there's also been mention of cartel, of Mexican cartel involvement in, over drugs and stuff.
Is the cartel or was the cartel active at that time in this area?
They were not in not the way that they are in today's world with the methamphetamine trade and things like that. But and again, I'm not gonna accuse any which one of those because I don't know yet. Yeah. But you know, these may be distractions. As far as we know, we don't know. But there's a lot of things that lead us that point to those different possibilities with the satanic worshiping and then the drugs and the money. You know, because when people go missing or get killed, you know, money and drugs and greed, you know, lust, those are big reasons why people die.
Among those three theories, is there a front runner or is it impossible to say?
I think it's impossible to say right now. It depends on what week it is. One week we're looking at the theory of the satanic worshiping and the black magic, and then the next week something points us in a different direction. So we're just trying to keep an open mind to all of it and not get tunnel vision on it. The one key thing we're really missing is the body, and that's the big thing we're missing. I believe that if we could find the body, then this case would move forward faster. We just don't have a body.
Talk me through how that would be true.
So when you have a missing person, you can't – there's no crime. So somebody that's missing, there's no crime. If you find a body, then you can determine if the person was murdered normally or if they died of natural causes or whatever the case may be. Brooke could be alive in California right now.
Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't know. I don't think that she would have left her mom. Her mom and her are very close. I don't think she would have left her mom or her friends. And if she had, she would have made contact by now. I don't believe that's a possibility.
So the body, you were saying if you had the body, then what?
If we had the body, that would confirm one of the many stories we have or theories.
About how she died?
About, maybe. For example, if the body is in said grave in said wooded area, then we take it and go back and look at all the tips that came in and say, okay, well, these 10 tips now may be true because of where the body's found.
I see.
So it's kind of like putting the puzzle together, but we don't have that main piece we need.
It's almost like you know how the story ends, and then you can work backwards to figure out what happens in between.
Correct. Correct. We believe that in the case file, the answers are in there. We just don't know. It's like a multiple choice test. We don't know which one is true, but we believe that the answer is right there in front of us. We just don't know which one's true yet.
That sounds like that could drive you crazy.
It absolutely can. Absolutely. It has been driving me crazy for 3 years now.
Can I ask you, why is this so important to you? I mean, I think I understand it, but someone might look and say, hey, this happened so long ago. Parents are both deceased. Brooke appears to be deceased. Why is this so important to get to the bottom of this?
Because this is my hometown. And when someone goes missing and allegedly something happened to that person, somebody needs to fight for justice for her. And if the family has passed on, there are friends of hers and there's me and there's this police department that will fight for justice for her. And I don't plan on giving up, even though it gets frustrating, because someone needs to fight for her. And if we don't fight for her, then who? Then who's going to fight for the justice for her? If this person or those persons killed her, we want to get to the bottom of it and hold those individuals accountable. So it's justice is what it's about for me.
I get that. And I could also see how it in some ways defines this place in the sense of like, this is not okay to happen in this town, right? And we're not going to accept this.
Right, exactly. And in 23 years, this is the only cold case we have. This is it. We don't have a lot of violent crime happen here. And I pride myself on that. And I love this city because of that. And we're 4.5 square miles. It's small. We're small. 7,000 residents. And we have about 5 violent crimes a year, which I love. But this one, you know, if we don't try to find out and give it my all, I'm going to try to the day I retire the best I can to try to find out what happened to her. And if we don't try, then who?
John Campbell, when I interviewed him today, was talking about being involved in the early days of this case, and he said a few things that were interesting. One, he said he took over about 2 years into it, and he said all he got were some written notes that were pretty hard to make sense of because it was pre-computer days, and he wished that it had been treated as a murder right from the beginning. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, anyone that looks, when you put a new set of eyes on a case like this, you can always say, well, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? And some of that's been frustrating for me too, you know, wondering why they didn't document it better or why they didn't do this or that. Unfortunately, you know, after you spend a couple of days worrying about that, you kind of have to let it go because it's just not there. And you kind of move on with what you have. But John's right. There. I wish it had been treated differently. But then again, you look at, you know, hundreds of thousands of people go missing every year in this country. And if every one of them was treated like a homicide, imagine how many officers it would take to you know, follow those cases correctly and work them like a homicide.
Sure.
We may get a missing person called this afternoon and in 30 minutes find the person. And that's the happy ending. We find the person, they're safe. And, you know, then we may get one that maybe another 23 years we haven't found. So you never know how it's going to end up. So I guess back then they thought it was just another runaway and that maybe she just ran away. She'll be home in a couple of days. You know, it was kind of thought of that way. And you never really know. So unfortunately, it was handled in a way that that turned out to not be just another runaway.
John made a reference to an area, he didn't tell me where, but that there was a place where they thought the body might be.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about? I understand it's sensitive, but what can you tell me about that?
There's several places mentioned in all of these tips that came in where the body may be. And some of the places are very difficult to navigate. I'm going to mention just a pond, for example, okay? If you have a pond and over the course of 20 plus years and the pond is in the mountains, the sediment that comes down the mountains over 20 plus years gathers in the bottom of that pond. So the bottom of the pond is not the bottom of the pond that it was 20 years ago. Or if you have concrete that is 16 feet deep and a body is put in concrete 15 feet down, how are we ever going to get it? How are we going to know it's down there? So these things...
Are those hypothetical or are those...
Those are possibilities.
Those are actual possibilities.
They're possibilities. They're possibilities. They're real possibilities. But I don't know which one is... To me, they're all equally important to check out.
So what do you do with those two possibilities?
Well, you hope that technology comes along far enough and you get someone that can either volunteer their equipment or maybe get the feds involved, or maybe Greenville County helps out and tries to locate, you know, a body in these areas. So a combination of all those things, and then, you think you can drain a pond, you know, ponds can be drained, but it depends on how big the pond is, how deep it is. There's so many factors that come into play. Concrete, you know, you can't just tear up the concrete unless you have something solid to show, yes, that body is down there. So then you look at, you know, equipment like sonar penetrating, yeah, or
ground,
you know,
penetrating,
ground penetrating radar. That's it, ground. And you look at that and using that, but it's not going to show a 3D image of a body or bones. It may just show a void. You know, so technology, it depends on technology.
Yeah.
It depends on, and I do believe that if we were ever to find the body, then you have DNA possibilities, you know, now. If there's anything with the body, maybe we find one of these suspects' DNA in there with it, you know. So that type of thing. That's why I mentioned the body is important right now. But you've got whales. People have said she's been put in a whale. Well, in the country, there's lots of whales. And to look in whales, we've looked in one whale. We had to get a camera from a local a company, drop it down about 50 feet and look around in that whale. And of course, we didn't find anything, but there's a lot that goes into trying to use the equipment and check out these places. So.
It seems overwhelming.
Very much so. It is. I go home with this. I think about it all the time. I have to try to set it aside because I have a family. You know, I have to try to set it aside and just not think about it all the time. But when you open up this Pandora's box of what happened to Brooke, then, you know, there's 50 people that have my work cell phone number. And they'll call me weekends, nights, if they have information. They don't mind calling. I don't mind them calling me because I want to try to get everybody involved I can to see if we can, you know, find out. But it weighs on me a little bit. I think I've had hair turn gray and turn loose a lot over the past couple of years.
You and me both. I mean, the other thing that seems like that would kind of mess with my head is that there are folks walking around this town. You said one of the first things you said when we started this interview is there are not a lot of secrets in this town. And yet we're talking about maybe the biggest secret right here, because if what you're saying is right, there may be multiple people who know what happened to her.
And I believe that. I believe multiple people know. I believe, in my mind, 6, 8, 10 people know what happened to her. And I believe there were accomplices, and there were people that helped help move the body or help to, you know, bury the body. I believe a lot of people know. However, the people that they're scared of, the ones above them that were running the show back then, or that held control over them, that's why they can't tell. And I believe a lot of the people that, or several of the people that know, are dead now. Ricky Sean Shirley, he's dead now, and I believe he knew what happened to her.
It sounds like your investigation would be helped by support from the county and maybe even the feds.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, the feds have been here. They've talked to us. They're assisting us on some things. The FBI is. They've worked with us a little bit when they have time. The county has helped us on some things with some searches of some areas outside of our jurisdiction here in the city. We do not believe her body's in the city. We believe it's out in the county. All these different locations that I've mentioned as possibilities, they're all out in the county.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the Esther Reed situation. Obviously, that's, first of all, you weren't here in Traveler's Rest, and it's kind of peripheral to Brooke Henson's story. But do you remember that unfolding at the time? What were your thoughts about all that?
I do remember that unfolding. And when that happened, it really piqued my interest. And I actually called John back then, and I said, John, what's going on? Is this a possibility? And he said, I'm checking. Let me check. And I said, do what you got to do. You know, I'm just – because I knew John, worked here. I was an investigator in another agency at the time. And it really piqued my interest that –
Now, when you say a possibility, do you mean that this was really Brooke Henson? It was up in New York at Columbia?
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, it would have been very interesting, you know, one tip back then in the Brooke Henson case was that she left and went to California, and she just ran away to California and wanted to be on her own. So it was feasible that she could have possibly went to New York, you know, and stayed up there. So it was a possibility, but then it didn't take much checking to determine the truth, obviously. But it did pique my interest in the case, and I was very curious at the time, and talked with John about it a little bit back then.
There was for a brief while, there was a ton of media attention, mainly on Esther Reed, but probably also spillover into Brooke Henson. I mean, look, here I am all these years later. What did that do for the case?
About 2000 and, I guess, 2006, there was hardly anything done on this case. Very little. John did a little bit, but there wasn't a lot to go on. When Esther Reed happened, all kinds of tips started coming in after that. So they determined that Esther Reed was Esther Reed and not Brooke Henson, but then more tips came in. It brought more attention. It brought it back to life, so to say. And that's kind of what I did when I came in 2018, 2019, to kind of bring it back to life. So it was good attention. It was sad that it happened the way it did, but it kind of brought it back to life. So the friends of hers wouldn't forget, so the community wouldn't forget. And as long as I'm here, we'll use our social media to always remind the community we'll never forget.
I was surprised that you reached out to me in all my years as a journalist. I don't think I know a case where the law enforcement reached out. I mean, this is a missing person, but clearly this must be part of your mission.
It is, and transparency is what I'm all about. I don't mind sharing. Of course, you know, there's details of the case I can't, obviously, and you understand why, but why hide? We need help. If one of your listeners hears this and says, you know what, I know the truth and I'm tired of, you know, it needs to come out now. And that'd be great. And like I said earlier, if we don't care, who's going to care? If I retire from here in whatever year I retire, it may be the end of it. Maybe nobody picks it up. Maybe nobody messes with it anymore. It's just my mentality. I don't want to let it go.
Do you think you're going to solve it?
Today, it feels like I'm not.
Why do you say that?
Because tomorrow it may change. And one day I feel like I will, and the next day I feel like I won't, based on what information has come in that day that has changed my mind. And last week, there's some information that came in I felt really good about. Today, I don't feel as good about it. So this is unlike any other case I've ever worked. I could work a case and I could tell you with 100% certainty I'm going to solve this case, or with 100% certainty there's no way I can solve this case because I don't have any evidence. In this case, there's a plethora of information, but we don't have a body. Yeah, I honestly think that we won't solve this case unless we have a body.
After speaking with Ben Ford, I spent the next several months reporting this story, making the season that you just heard. But I never stopped thinking about Ben and the enormity of the task that he faced. Part of me hoped that maybe after the podcast came out, he might get some new leads. So when our last episode dropped, I called him up to check in. That's next, after the break.
Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase N.A. member FDIC 2024, JPMorgan Chase & Co. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Are you there?
Yeah, I hear you now. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good.
I wanted to check in with you on a few things. So it sounds like you had a chance to listen to the podcast. I wondered, like, what your reactions were.
You know, I really enjoyed it. I didn't know a lot about Esther Reed in that case, just for what John Campbell told me. And what I read in the news. I mean, I was very surprised that you had a conversation with Esther, and I loved hearing what was going on in her mind.
What did you make of this kind of new stage of her life where she's Esther Matthews and she's a professor out at Gonzaga? What did you make of that?
Well, you know, hearing where she came from and what she went through and her, you know, when she was younger, you know, it just showed me and it confirmed that anybody can do what they put their mind to. And she chose to live one way and do certain things a certain way for a long time. And then she decided to do it a different way. I love to see when people actually turn their lives around and they're more successful than they were when they were making bad decisions. So I thought it was great. I thought it was a great story.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'm wondering if, since the podcast came out, whether any additional tips or bits of information have come your way.
We haven't, not since the podcast has come out. Ironically, though, before the podcast was released, I did have a man contact me from our county detention center, and we talked with him, and eventually we got him in here and he gave us some information, and he actually said, "I know where Brooke is buried."
Whoa.
And we said, "Well, how do you know that?" And he said, "Well, I heard two people talking about it, and they said where she was buried at." And I said, "Can you take us to the spot?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Let's go." So we went to the spot. It was on a piece of property that belongs to a family that the mom and dad are deceased there. So the sister was in charge of the property and gave us permission to look on the property. So we went on the property. He pointed out the location. We put him back in the vehicle away from the scene, and we brought in cadaver dog alerted. So we took that dog away and we brought another dog in, and that dog alerted.
What is that? When you say a cadaver dog alerted, what does that mean exactly?
So that means they picked up what they believe to be the scent of decayed body or bones. Now, it's not a perfect science. And it's not an absolute. So that's why we used two different dogs and we had a statement from somebody. So we used all of that in order to get a search warrant for the property. Well, Greenville County came out and helped, and we dug and found nothing. So we kind of climaxed there thinking that we were on to something, and we didn't find one bone. Nothing. And we dug a lot. Big area.
Do you think this was, at the time, were you like, this is it? Or were you skeptical?
You know, I try not to get my hopes up. And I try not to show that I get my hopes up because I've been let down so many times.
Yeah.
But in this case, you know, I thought there was going to be something. I thought, yeah, this is a very good possibility. Let's find her. And so I did think it was. But I didn't want to show too much enthusiasm due to the fact I've been let down so many times. So when we found out it wasn't, I was disappointed. But then yet again, it's another lead that we've checked off.
Wow. It's tricky. It's like you don't know. You have to follow up every lead, I guess, that seems even remotely credible, I guess, right? That's the only.
Yeah. And you know, we were hesitant to listen to him at first. But anytime somebody says, I know where the body's at, I can show you. I mean, we've got to go. We've got to go with it. And we've got to check it out. But that's the most we've done with the case in the past few months.
I've had people ask me too, whether you're any further along than maybe getting some ground penetrating radar at the water treatment plant.
So, you know, I did some more research and I found a company and they volunteer their services to law enforcement all over the country and they have ground penetrating radar. So that's who I plan to call next.
Yeah. Please let me know how that goes, whether, I mean, if that ends up happening, or just stay in touch with me, I'd be curious. I really would be curious.
Look, it's so nice talking to you again, and y'all have a good weekend there. And
okay, take care, Ben. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jake. Bye-bye.
Talking to Ben and getting this update on the investigation, it really hit home for me how there were all these leads, all these people who claimed to know what happened to Brooke, and how each time one of these leads surfaced, he had to take it seriously, and that inevitably, part of him hoped that this one might be the breakthrough, the one that helped him solve the case and, at long last, bring some closure and some healing to this town. But so far, it was just dead ends and heartbreak, and then, inevitably, a new lead, and the cycle would begin again. I could see how, after so many years, this would all take a toll on everyone. And yet, he's still at it. We'll keep you updated if we hear anything else from the Travelers Rest PD. Ben Ford is still working diligently on the Brooke Henson case. So, if you have any new information at all that might be helpful, please contact him at ford@trpolice.com. That's ford@trpolice.com. Deep Cover is produced by Amy Gaines and Jacob Smith. This episode was edited by Sophie Crane, mastering by Sarah Brugger. Our show art was designed by Sean Carney. Original scoring and our theme was composed by Luis Guerra. Special thanks to Karen Chakurji, Mia Lobel, Greta Cohn, and Jacob Weisberg. I'm Jake Halpern.